This is Annuity Straight Talk. Since 2008, your host, Brian Anderson, has helped clients nationwide navigate the complex market for annuities. With Brian's assistance, hundreds of clients have achieved a profitable and secure retirement. I would know, because Brian has answered many of my questions concerning annuities and retirement planning. So that you can benefit as well, let's get started. Here's Brian.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Annuity Straight Talk podcast, episode number 38. My name is Brian Anderson, coming to you again from Western Montana. Beautiful spring day here today. I got a little glare behind me, so the shot's not that great. Aside from the audio and video capabilities, I don't have a whole professional studio by any means, but I hope you forgive me because the objective of this podcast is to get good information to good people who are curious, give everyone another platform to absorb the information. Some people like to read it. Some people like to watch it. Some people like to hear it. You know, other people like to do it hands-on and dig into the numbers right away. And I want to say, you know, I've talked to, I think I mentioned it last week, a lot of clients have found that this is a really good way. Like some people said, well, we really like seeing you out there all the time. You know, people have done business with me for years. Some I talk to all the time. Some I talk to once a year. Some people seem like they don't ever need me at all. I would consider those people maybe customers, not clients, but I'm always available. And I think a lot of people just like seeing that. So also, I brought it up with, one of the guys I talk to a lot who's become more of a friend than a client, and we've always had a good relationship, but we share a lot of, obviously, March Madness just finished. We both like sports a lot, and so we end up talking about sports. And so congrats to Patrick that Kansas won the national championship this year. He's a Kansas fan. Couldn't be happier for him. So, and I'm sorry to anyone else whose team did not win. I enjoy it. I don't have a team. But anyway, so I was talking to him, and I asked him, I said, you know, I got a lot of stories because when we talk, you know, we tell stories. And one of the things about Patrick is he and I kind of grew up the same way on farms and ranches and around. I think we both spent time bucking hay bales when we were kids. And so we have a lot of things in common. And I asked him, I said, I've told him stories. He's told me stories, good stories. And I feel like I got a lot of stories because a lot of things I've done in my life. And I asked him, I said, I wonder if maybe I should just do a couple of podcasts where I just tell stories. Instead of talking about technical numbers, annuity this, annuity that, he said he thought it was a great idea. So I asked a few other people that I talked to last week, what if I just did this? So this doesn't really have anything to do with annuities. I just thought, yeah, I've done some interesting things. And I remember early in my career, this isn't the story, but I remember the agency I worked for at the beginning of my career, they were doing an office remodel and they wanted to make the conference room look like a bank, you know, look like real money centered, money focused. And I said, no, you can't do that. And I said, why? I said, well, here's my idea. I think you should make it more adventure oriented. I think you should make it look like a vacation, like a relaxing place. And you should do something like that. So people feel imaginative when they come in there. And I think it would be a lot better than kind of a stuffy old, like, you know, 1920s bank theme in the conference room. So they liked the idea. They did it. So they had a bunch of pictures of saltwater flats and beaches. They put a saltwater fish tank in there. It was really cool. And that's kind of always been my mindset. Like, I want people to imagine and people to dream. And a lot of that comes from my childhood, my college career, everything. And so I think what people will find interesting possibly, I think that way because I'm kind of a dreamer. Obviously, I think of alternative ways to do things. I'm kind of contrarian. I've got a lot of stories I can talk to about why I'm, you know, I look at things the way I do. But one of the things I thought about is I've always said this, and not necessarily that to people, I said it to colleagues, other advisors, even friends of mine, say, why are you doing what you're doing? And so I thought, well, this is something I don't communicate, but it's a really good lesson, is that understand that my young adult life, I was a rafting guide, a fishing guide, Montana and Alaska. And that kind of started when I was a kid. Our big activities were camping trips and mountain lakes and going fishing with my dad and my brothers and friends and stuff like that. And that's what I really love to do. That's why I kind of do from a recreational perspective what I do today, because that stuff doesn't leave you once you get addicted to it. And one of the things my dad did is, I think I was probably about 15, and he bought a whitewater raft, and I thought it was really cool. And so I started to learn how to float down rivers and row the boat and all that stuff. And at the time, there weren't that many young kids that were able to do that. And I would always see, it was right outside of Glacier Park, and I would always see the guided trips, the outfitters taking people on whitewater trips. And I'd see the guide in the back, and I'd look and I'd say, man, wouldn't that be an awesome way to spend the summer? And so from that point, I kind of made it my mission. I'm going to try to get a job doing that. And when I graduated from high school, I was 18. I was old enough to do it. And because I was well known in sports locally, I was not a star by any means. But remember, this is small town Montana. A lot of the business owners kind of knew who I was. So it was easier for me to get a job doing that. And I mean, this podcast could be 3 hours long, for crying out loud. But Joe Rogan does some of those. I guess I'm not Joe Rogan yet, but I remember it. So I started out as a whitewater guide, and I had a day off one day. And so I went and I climbed down into the canyon, and I went fly fishing, and I was fishing. And it was one of those hot summer days where the raft company was really busy. And on those whitewater trips, each guide would take two, maybe three trips down the river. I was like, I would wait, and I knew, and I had a really good day fishing, and I would wait until the boats from my company, the guys I knew and my friends, were about to float past, and I'd start fishing, and I would catch a fish for all the people floating by and screaming in the whitewater. And it was really funny, because I had a great day, and I didn't think anything of it, but yeah, I was kind of showing off a little bit, but just because the fishing was really good. I'd always say I'm not a great fisherman, but I know where the fishing is great, and that's kind of what I focus on finding. Anyway, so I remember that, you know, that was that, and the next day I was getting ready to go back to work, and I lived in a little camper trailer right by the equipment shed for the raft company. And the next day there was a big family that was taking like 10 or 12 people. So as a fishing guide, you take two people per boat. And so they needed six boats. Well, the company wasn't really focused on fishing at the time, so they didn't have a whole lot of fishing guides. And I got a knock on my trailer door, like bang, 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 at about 6:30 in the morning the next day. And I said, yeah, what's up? And they said, Brian, get your ass out of bed. You're a fishing guide today. Whoa. Hey, that's cool. Not to mention that the fishing guide makes like three, four times as much money as just a guy who paddles a boat down the river. And so that was the story, is they were talking around, well, everybody was sitting around talking, well, who else can take this trip? Who else can do it? And that they said, what about Brian? Every time we floated by him yesterday, he had a fish on. And so it was kind of by design. I wasn't intending to be a fishing guy, but anyway, so that kind of launched me into doing it. It was my first year. My second year, I did a lot more. And then by my third and fourth year at that company, and this was just summertime trips, right? By the third and fourth year, I did nothing but fishing trips. And so it was just a really fun way to spend the summer. Why I consider that the best annuity training possible is because the guys that can afford to take fishing trips are all 55, 60, 65 year old dudes that have money and are retired. So I spent long hours in a boat with guys in their 60s, 70s even, who had money, and I got to pick up all their conversations between each other. And I also learned how to make small talk conversation, or keep the conversation interesting, with people that were of retirement age. I didn't know it at the time, but that was the best training I could possibly have asked for. I learned to communicate. I always liked to write. And so the point was to understand what people want, be able to give them. And at that time, it was conversation, it's entertainment, because as a guide, you're kind of entertaining the people. Fishing always isn't great, but you have to have a good time no matter what. So you have to be able to communicate the land to people. Hey, look, we're in Glacier. It's amazing. Like, you're floating on drinking water. It's cleaner than the stuff that comes out of taps in just about any American city. And so it's just a gorgeous place. So you could draw focus to other places, and clearly you always want the fishing to pick up. But that was just one way of, again, keeping people entertained, keeping people occupied and interested no matter the situation. And I had hundreds of days of doing it. So I obviously want to take it one step further. I met another guide who said, hey, you really should go to Alaska, and I've got this great place for you. And I thought, I've always wanted to go to Alaska. Kind of a funny story about that. My dad worked on the pipeline in the early 70s as a welder, and he worked there for a couple of summers. And I remember he told me that when my mom was pregnant with me, so I was born in November, and in September, they were getting ready to go home for the season. And they had a couple of days and he took her fishing for silver salmon on the Kenai River in Alaska. And when I, because I kept telling him I always wanted to go to Alaska, and he said, you know, it makes sense to me that you were that close. You were in your mom's belly at the time. She was having a time of her life catching fish on the Kenai River in the early, in the 70s. And it makes perfect sense. You were that close, but you didn't get to do it. So I guess that's why you always wanted to go back. And so I took a job at this place, and a friend of mine that guided there as well, he said, this is, and he had done it for a couple of years. He'd been doing it for a while. And he said, this is summer camp for big kids. I'm telling you, it's the best. And so, and it really was, because we were all 21, 22, a couple guys in their, you know, late 20s, but we were out there. We had jet boats. We had unlimited fuel. We got into float planes every morning and flew out to different rivers. I think I fished probably 35 or 40 different rivers in that time period. If the fishing wasn't good at one place, you jump in the plane, you go to another one. And, but what that meant is that there again, I was spending 4 months out of a summer sitting in boats, talking to guys that are 60 years old. So it's no coincidence that a lot of my friends are actually in their 60s and 70s, some of my closest friends. Now I've got buddies my age and all that stuff, but I've always been interested in being the young guy in the crowd. So that really transitioned to the beginning of my career as a financial advisor. I remember, and like at Alaska, it's a notch above. I mean, the guys that go up there have serious money. It's a dang expensive trip. You imagine having four or five big float planes and a helicopter and things to take you fishing. It's like, it is summer camp for big kids. And a lot of those, a lot of the people up there, 95% of them are just wonderful people. I met a lot of good people, but I was in college studying finance. So the first year I went up there was right before my senior year of college. And I got to know a couple of people, and I'd always ask them, you know, I couldn't come right out about it with everyone, because again, you know, you're there, your job is to make sure they enjoy this vacation that they spent $25,000 on. Anyway, I remember asking this one guy. He had told me that he was in his late 40s. He was retired. Hell, I don't know. He's probably worth 20, 30 million, maybe more. And he had just kicked butt. And he had worked in New York. He was in Wall Street. And anyway, I asked him, I said, hey, listen, maybe a little advice here. And I asked a lot of people. This is the one I remember the most. And he said, I said, hey, I'm getting a finance degree and I want to make a good living. I want to help people. And I want to be able to have the freedom to do stuff like you just did. You just came up here for a week and that. And I said, what would your advice be to me in the next couple of years? How should I get my start? And he stood there on the front porch of the lodge before he took the van into the airport to leave. And it was right on the edge of a beautiful lake. There's no other human settlement on this lake. It's like 19 miles long, gorgeous Southwest Alaska. And he kind of took a deep breath and he looked across the lake and he said, if I were you, I wouldn't do anything different than you're already doing. He said, if I could do it all over again, I would be doing exactly what you're doing right now. And he said, if you work hard and you're honest, the opportunity will come and you'll know to take advantage of it. And I thought, yeah, right. I mean, that guy that got all that money and he's saying, oh, I wish I would have done it differently. But fair enough. I thought that was very important. But again, that kind of gave me the idea that I want to be effective. And remember, this is all around the time when, you know, Enron and Arthur Anderson were going through fraud investigations and charges and all that garbage came out on Wall Street. I was getting a finance degree and it seemed like corporate America was kind of in shambles and public confidence was shot. The dot-com bubble was bursting. People were losing money. I saw one 401k that went from $2 million to $80,000 and never came back. Like incredibly hurtful things happened to a lot of people during that time. And so there wasn't a lot of confidence in, you know, the stock market or corporate America. I have since talked to a lot of people who never got back into it because of that. But anyway, I didn't know, I was kind of lost. And so I thought, well, what the heck, I'll just graduate from college and I'll come back up here for another summer. So, which is what I did. But I did a lot of things that kind of drove that point home, where recognizing good people, being able to communicate with them. And I think that was the absolute best training I could ever get. You know, some really big moments in my life. I was there 9/11, 2001, and I was there with a lot of people who had direct connections to business on Wall Street. They had family members involved, and fortunately, nobody lost something. I remember there was one guy who had his office in the World Trade Center, and he had not taken more than a 3-day weekend for 14 and a half years. And he was up there on 9/11, 2001. And that guy was very, very humbled. He gave all of his staff the week off. And so nobody that worked for him, and I think he had an office on the 47th floor or something. I don't know. I remember, but his office was destroyed. And he happened to have taken the first vacation in 14 years. I thought, well, some things like that make me believe in a higher power. He's a very nice, nice person. Certainly didn't deserve what happened to a lot of the people that day. Anyhow, but not to focus on that too much. I've got so many stories about Alaska. And I just remember, you know, to talk about like what an impression it made on me to talk to successful people, to recognize success, to appreciate the hard work of other people, have respect for the assets they've got and the things they want to keep private. A lot of people don't, there's, you know, anonymity, privacy is extremely important. And so I learned this a long time ago in the guiding business is when people are on vacation, they don't necessarily want to talk about work. So I never brought it up. I didn't say, hey, what did you do for a living? I know some greedy guys back in, you know, in the Montana Raft Company, they'd pick their guy that they were going to take fishing or rafting based on what he did for, they'd walk around the yard in front of the raft company. Hey, what do you do for a living? What do you do for a living? It's like, you're already taking them out of their vacation. They're going, maybe the guy hates his job. Maybe the guy hates his boss. Maybe this, maybe that. They're on vacation. They don't want to talk about work. But when you put two successful guys, typically they came as friends. You sit in that middle of the boat and you roam down the river and you listen to them talk to each other, man, you can pick up a lot of things. And so what I learned from that is there are a lot of ways to do good business. And I remember speaking to the CEO of a major corporation, and this is about Enron and Arthur Andersen. And I had dinner with him one night and I said, hey, his name was Mike. I won't tell you his last name. Just a fantastic human being. And I said, how could I honestly go into business or go into one of those large corporations, given everything that's happened and nobody trusts what's going on? And he said, there are some bad actors in the corporate world. He said, but you have to understand that there are a lot of really good people out there. They may be caught in a bad system, but it does not mean they're bad people. And so it kind of restored my faith in it a little bit that if I did things the right way, then I would be able to attract the type of people that were worth the effort. And I think one of the best stories I have about Alaska was that I remember we had at the lodge, we had what was called an out camp where some of these places that we would fish consistently were 80 miles from where people were staying. And that's what the float planes are for. Well, the lodge has to put jet boats out there, a camp. They have to leave fuel there because the plane can't carry all the fuel all the time. And so we'd get assigned to go stay in the out camp. They'd take a really nice tent with a full kitchen and all this stuff. So you had a pretty good setup out there. But I remember one summer I was there for 100 days. I spent 72 days at an out camp that was 81 miles from the lodge itself. So one thing was I had a lot of free time to do whatever I wanted because, you know, people would leave the lodge at 8. They wouldn't get to that camp until 9:15, 9:30. They also had to leave earlier to get back to the lodge for happy hour and dinner. So I was working about a 9:30 to 4:30 day, 9:30 to 4, something like that. And I had a ton of freedom, which I truly enjoyed. And I was out there by myself for most of the other time. And there were times where if the weather wasn't bad, that's another thing. I would radio the weather because the weather in my spot could be way different than the weather at the lodge or vice versa. They might have a fog bank and they can't fly off its line of sight flying. So they couldn't fly off the lake. Or I might have a fog bank on the river. They might not be able to land. So they didn't want to burn the fuel to come out there if it wasn't worth doing. So there were times when the weather would get really bad. There's one time I went 12 days without seeing anyone. But what was awesome about it is I got to know the freedom of having independence. I mean, when I was out there in June, the sun barely sets. It's light 24 hours a day. And I was buzzing around that river. And that's the other thing is they want you to go fishing. You got to be able to tell where the fishing is good. And it makes it easier because when they come out there, they have a shorter day than they would in the places where they just take a 10-minute flight. So I got to scout the river a lot and I got to cruise around on drift boats. I saw like more bears than I could count, giant moose, met some natives. There were a lot of native villages on the river and they had little cabins, kind of community property, little cabins. So I'd see the natives. I have a couple of not so great stories about that, but I remember, it was really great. There was one native guy who was the head of the village council in one of the villages, And he had a big steam house, and he'd come up from the village every weekend. Sometimes he'd stay there for a week, but he was about 15 miles from my camp, and he'd always buzz up to my camp to say, "Hey, Brian, I'm here." You know, Herman was his name, Herman Nelson, great guy in Kilikinik, Alaska. So I got to know him really well. And I asked, I remember this is another thing that I said, I kind of was interested in how their subsistence lifestyle and how they lived over the centuries. I thought that stuff was fascinating to me. And I asked him, I said, I kept asking him questions about certain things. He said, "Brian, you ask lots of questions." I said, "Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to bug you. I'm really curious about, you know, your life experiences." And he was probably in his mid 50s at the time. He said, "No, I didn't say it was a bad thing." And so I've always asked a lot of questions because I've always wanted to learn and know. But it was a really crazy experience because I got a lot of free time. And then in that 7 hours a day when people would show up, I was on with the rich dude that was 60, 65 years old. And I get to pick up conversations he'd have with his buddy. There were a couple of corporate weeks that they hosted where a corporation would bring a bunch of, I remember Boeing was one of them, where Boeing would bring the purchasing agents of all the other major airlines, wine and dine them at this lodge, take them fishing, and they'd put a Boeing guy and a Delta guy in the boat or something like that, right? And so you get to hear the stories of Boeing and Delta. You get to hear, you know, they're talking about economics, and because the point of that trip was to do business. And I remember hearing of several multi-billion dollar deals that were struck based on that trip alone, which was really, really cool to me. But on those short days when I'm out there for 7 hours and I got 7 hours, I go from personal, perfect, absolute freedom to being on with a 60, 65-year-old guy and picking up those business conversations, learning a lot about it. And I think maybe I was possibly more interested in that aspect because I was young enough where I could still make use of that information. And one of the, this is not related at all, but I remember there was a point in late August, early September where the weather was bad. And I said it before where they couldn't land a plane for 12 days. Well, the first day they couldn't land was the day they were supposed to bring my food because I was out of everything, about everything but oatmeal. And so I was getting pretty desperate. Well, in early September is when all the moose hunters show up. And so a lot of the native cabins are leased out to guides that take people moose hunting. And what I had to do is I don't remember what I had. I had more than oatmeal, but I didn't have a lot. And I remember I lost a lot of weight because I was really hungry. They couldn't get to me. And there was a village about 60 miles away. I was thinking about going down there because they've got a little store, but I didn't even have any money. So I didn't have money on me. What use was it? So I never took any. Anyhow, so I went 12 days without much to eat. Well, the silver salmon were running. And so every day I would, the people weren't coming, I'd go out and I would catch a silver salmon. I'd go fly fishing and I'd haul in a salmon and I'd fillet it. And that was what I basically lived on for 12 days. That's why I lost a lot of weight because I didn't have much else. But I remember the night before they got there, they were really desperate to get there. And they said, "Well, we need to get to you no matter what." It had been almost been 12 days. "And we need to get to you no matter what. But we want you to go, what we're going to do is we're going to meet you downriver. And you're going to take some," they said, "you might have to go up to 20 miles downriver just so we can find a place to land the plane. We can get you your stuff and you can take these guys fishing for the day and then we'll leave off." So I thought, well, I haven't been down that far. So I cruised down the river and I was going to go, and I was starving pretty, it was like pretty spiritual time for me because I think when you're fasting for that long, living on nothing but salmon meat, it was a very interesting story. But I remember the night before they said I was going to be going downstream. So I just decided, well, I haven't fished down there. I'm going to run down this afternoon and I'm going to go fish the area, see if I can find the spots, make sure I at least can show these guys a good time and have some spots dialed in. While I was cruising a few miles below my camp was one of those cabins where the outfitter had been taking people moose hunting and they'd been there for 3 or 4 days. Well, I come up upon this. It was funny, like there were two channels right below my camp that went for about 4 or 5 miles and then met up again to make the main river again. I typically took, it was called the West Braid rather than the main river channel. Whatever reason, this time I took the main channel and I was humming downstream in my jet boat and I got around to where I could see this camp. They had poles set up and they had a giant moose rack, obviously fresh, that was sitting up on, that was hanging from this rack. And the outfitter heard me coming by and he said, and he just stepped out and he just kind of gives me the, "Come over here." And I thought, I said, okay, well, I'll go talk to him. So I turn over and I cruise up onto the shoreline and beach the boat. And he said, how you doing? And shook his hand and met. He said, just want to let you know that we've had a pretty good hunt so far. We got a steamship round of moose on the rotisserie and a bunch of cold drinks. You're welcome to come up and help yourself. And I almost started crying. I was so happy because I hadn't eaten anything but a few salmon for the last 12 days. It was amazing. I think I lost probably 20 pounds. Great diet, but I was only 22 years old. So that wasn't the time I was looking for a diet. Anyway, that was pretty interesting moment where I went up there and I had fresh slices of moose meat, which was delicious. And man, I would have eaten anything. I was about to eat my shoe. So that was kind of an interesting story about that. And the great thing about it is I did stay there and stuff myself. I didn't go fishing downstream, but the next day I was able to catch the plane about 20 miles down. And fortunately, they brought me some supplies and we had a good day fishing. So everything worked out. But anyway, don't want to take too much of this time. I think there's a point where I can do a follow-up on this because there's lots and lots of stories. Just really some amazing moments with bears and moose and salmon and trout. Yeah, it was summer camp for big kids. So that is what I consider to be the best annuity training possible. Just hearing that high-level analytics business discussion, helping me understand ways to think and use my certain form of intelligence. I'm not going to consider myself to be intelligent, but in this path, I am. And I've done a lot of work that's out there for everybody to enjoy. So wanted to explain a little bit more about me and think maybe get off of the serious annuity conversations. And we'll get back to some of that stuff, the technical details of that. I've got a lot of titles prepared. But again, I'm going to try to intersperse these a little bit more. When the newsletter comes out, I should have probably shared some photos, but they're all in weird different spots. I will look at that and see if I can get some uploaded for the newsletter. Who knows? But anyway, again, best annuity training possible. I had it. Not many other people got that opportunity. And that really did a lot to shape who I am and why I do things the way I do. I like personal freedom. I like flexibility. I like making money. I like seeing other people make money, and I want to do good business for good people. So anyway, thank you again for joining me. If you want to share stories of your favorite adventures, or if you want to talk to me about what I did in Alaska, or get some tips if you want to go up there, I know a lot of spots, spend a lot of time out there. My number is 800-438-5121. Schedule a call on the website, upper right corner, schedule a call. Pretty simple and easy. If you want to nail down a time, and I'll give you a call if you do it. So thank you for joining me for episode 38. I hope you guys all have a great day and I'll talk to you next time. Okay, bye.
You have been listening to Annuity Straight Talk. The preceding information is for informational and educational purposes only. It does not represent tax, legal, or investment advice. The views expressed by guests on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Annuity Straight Talk or its partners. No information presented today should be acted upon without meeting with a qualified and licensed professional. It is important that you read all insurance contract disclosures carefully before making a purchase decision. Guarantees are based on the financial strength and claims paying ability of the insurance company.